letting us have the emotions, right? So if you have grief, let, you know, then grieve, sit with that. If you have fear or anger, then sit with that. Because it's feeling the emotions, acknowledging the emotions that you're having, you know, write about it, talk about it, even if it's to yourself.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to today's Cosmic Chat with Debbie Sugarbaker. I am so excited to have a very esteemed guest here. We have Dr. Lottie. She is a medical intuitive, a doctor herself. She is also a psychic medium, an award-winning author, and a keynote speaker. And she has also developed a few programs to help with ancestral healing, which we're going to talk about today. It's with HemiSync. So we're going to learn more about that. And I feel like I've missed something, but you just, you know, you have an array of gifts to offer the world. So today we're going to be talking about your near-death experiences, but if there's anything else you'd like to add.
Anything you want to ask me, I'm open to having a conversation about almost anything. So I'm delighted to be here. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's my true pleasure. So Dr. Lottie, I know that you've obviously have all of these different ways that you are sharing with humanity and helping us to elevate consciousness and helping, you know, individuals and us as a collective, I believe, just raise ourselves into seeing and perceiving the world in a different way and maybe feeling it more through our hearts, you know, viewing the connection between science and spirituality in a whole new light that, you know, we haven't had for many generations. So I wanted to hear a little bit about your path. How did you come into all of this? And I know we want to hear about your near-death experiences. You know, how did you kind of come into all of this world of consciousness, basically?
Right. So that's a really good question, because before I had my death experiences, so the first one was when I was 34 and I was giving birth to my third child, and then I got really sick and I had my second experience. But before I had those experiences of leaving my body, I had no belief that that was even possible. I had no beliefs in the afterlife, spirit world, angels, religion. I mean, you name it. I was a complete atheist. Didn't believe in anything. I would have laughed at somebody who would tell, if I was the person that was listening to my own experience, having been experienced by somebody else, I would have laughed at it back then, because I really didn't have any beliefs in it at all. And I would have thought, you know, that person is crazy. I don't know what they're thinking. That can't happen. Because I was just such an atheist. I was such a scientist. And, you know, if I couldn't see it or prove it, then as far as I was concerned, it didn't exist. Wow. So it's been quite the journey through life, because then when I had my near-death experience, so my first one was after my third child was born, and it started with that this was a girl, and it started with that she was born in a 7.4 earthquake. I think they downgraded it later to 7.3, but it was in Anaheim, California, and it was in the eastern part of Anaheim. So the earthquake was centered out in the desert. So it was actually a bigger earthquake than the Northridge earthquake that a lot of people are familiar with. But there was no damage because the epicenter was in the desert, so that wasn't heavily populated. But the hospital I was in was built on rollers. And so the whole hospital was just swaying back and forth. And there was these windows from floor to ceiling. And that was one of the moments in my life when I thought I was going to die, which is very different from my actual near-death experience, which happened 10 or 12 days later, because that was a moment when I thought I was going to die. And I think a lot of people have been in these situations. You're in an almost in an accident. You kind of feel like, oh my gosh, this is it. Like, how am I supposed to? And then somehow, you know, you manage to steer the car in and get saved. But so it was a moment like that, and they were leaning over me, holding me down. I would have levitated off the bed if they didn't hold me down. It was that bad. It was shaking so bad. And my labor actually stopped. I was contracting about 3 minutes apart, And my last baby had been born within 2 hours of my first contraction. So I was, you know, it was going and I was, that baby was ready to come out, but my labor actually stopped because that's how great the fear was. So if you're in the jungle and you're about to be eaten by a lion, you're just going to stop because your body says, I have to get the safety. Then I'll give birth. Mm. So the labor stopped. And then it was, you know, like we lost all the power. The hospital got, you know, put on the generators. We had a light of a birth, of like a night light in the birthing unit, because this was at, you know, 5:30 or 6 in the morning. So it was still dark outside. So anyway, then my labor stopped and I gave birth, and then I hemorrhaged after the birth. And I was just yelling to my husband, take the baby, take the baby. I had such bad contractions and pain, but the baby was already born. And then I hemorrhaged a large mountain of blood clots. And then the nurses and midwives and whoever was in that birthing unit was massaging my abdomen. And I mean, we had so many aftershocks and we were running on a generator. And so they put me on IV drip to contract the uterus back down to see if they could squeeze out what was left. And the next day, I stayed an extra day in the hospital, and then they sent me home and they said, everything looks good and you're not bleeding much. It looks normal. And I was sent on my way. And then for the next 10 days, I kept having the severe pain. It was like, imagine swallowing a bowling ball. This is my best description. And putting it right down in your pelvic area, and it's pushed down on your pubic bones. And so you have pain radiating down in your pubic bone and down your legs. And it was so bad that I would have to sit down. And I kept thinking, what is this pain? Like, this is my third child. And I couldn't figure out why it was so much. And my friends had a like a baby shower for me because I had two boys previously. And so they were going to give me all these girl things. And I went to the park, and they were going to have this in the park. And I was like, I have to use the restroom. Kids with me went to the restroom and hemorrhaged a huge blood clot that was the size of, you know, a baby's head. It was just ginormous. And I ran back to my friend and I said, something is really wrong. Like, I have to go to the hospital now. Went to the ER. They kept me for observation. They did a manual examination. Nothing much was happening. And then after 2 or 3 hours, they said, well, everything looks normal. It could have been a second lining that was shed. And they sent me home. The next evening, I hemorrhaged again. Same story again, large blood clot. We called the hospital and said, should we come back? What should we do? And I, like, yelling to my husband, okay, bro, I'm not going. It stopped. They're not going to do anything, because they didn't do anything the day before. So it was decided I should see the doctor the next morning in Huntington Beach, California, where we lived at the time. And I went to see the doctor and same thing, manual inspection. Nah, I don't see much wrong. Just go home. It could have been a second lining. I'm like, okay, there's no blood work, no ultrasound, nothing. Sent me on my way. And then that afternoon, early evening, hemorrhaged again. So I said, all right, we're going to have to go back to the ER because I can't be hemorrhaging every day. So went back to the ER, same thing, manual inspection. Okay, well, it doesn't seem like nothing much is going on right now. So we'll just keep you for observation. So I'm lying on this table. This is in 1992. I don't even have a buzzer or a bell to ring for help. The door is closed. And all of a sudden, I start bleeding again. So I'm thinking, wow, at least I'm bleeding. Thank God, because I'm in the ER. They're finally going to figure it out. And I'm just lying. I'm not thinking much about it because I'm getting used to this now. It's been 3 days and it wasn't as big of a blood clot as the other ones. And all of a sudden, this nurse comes. She opens the door and she looks in to check on me, and her jaw just drops. I see that fear in her face. It's like, oh, you know, and I hear the call on the loudspeaker, you know, OBGYN stat to the ER, OBGYN stat to the ER. And I'm just thinking, oh, thank God, finally, they're figuring out something's wrong. So I'm just lying there waiting. And this middle-aged doctor comes running in. And I'm thinking, oh my God, thank God he's middle-aged. He's seen things before, because all the doctors had been young and kind of, you know, young doctors that might not have had as much experience with these kind of events. So he said, okay, how much have you been bleeding? So I said, okay, well, started Wednesday, bled Thursday, bled again today. And now I'm back here again. So he said, all right, let's take a look. And so him and this younger physician, probably a resident, do a manual inspection. And as they do the manual inspection again, another large blood clot comes out. So at this point, now I've been hemorrhaging, you know, so many times since Wednesday. And so I try to sit up and tell him, and all I can say is, I don't feel too good. And he knew at that point exactly what was going on. So he just pushed me back down on the table, and the room filled with people. Now my eyes are closed because I'm going into shock because I've lost so much blood. And I have a nurse on my left trying to place an IV, and I have a nurse on my right coding my blood pressure. And as I'm lying on the table in the ER, it is as if you're jumping out of an airplane and I was just falling through space, which probably, I mean, that could have been related to just the blood pressure dropping. I just felt like I was falling. And as she's trying to place this IV, I remember thinking, what's taking her so long? Like, how come she can't get that in? But now I know that once you start going into shock, your blood vessels collapse, which is why when you go to the ER, sometimes they place an IV. That's so that they have access to your vein in case you start fainting or going into shock. Now they can inject medication.
Right.
But they hadn't placed an IV. So this is 1992. So protocols were probably very different back then. And so as I'm lying on this table, I know at this point that I'm dying. And so I'm holding on to my soul. And I didn't even believe my soul was separate at that point. I'm just holding on for my life, trying to stay inside my body because I can feel the separation happening where it feels like something is about to leave my body. So I understood at that point, I am dying. And that's very different from the thought I had when I was giving birth, when I, oh my gosh, you know, we're going to die. The thought that you could die, this was a knowing, like I knew I was dying.
Wow. And ask you, did you feel like a cord? You know how they say that there's usually like a silver cord. Did you feel any cord? Like when you say you were trying to hold yourself in, or it was just more of a sensation?
Yeah, it was more of a sensation. And so I never saw a silver cord, but so I'm trying to hold my soul back in my body, but then it just, within a split second, I'm just pulled out of my body. And so then I find myself floating above my body, I would say 3 to 5 feet. But when I'm outside my body, I understand, number one, that life continues on and that your soul is separate from your body. But there's also a feeling of unconditional love. But I also knew that there was no time on the other side. And time is just something that we experience when we're in the body. Because when I was outside my body, I had access to past, present, and future. There was no distinguishing between the different time periods. It was like all one. And also I knew that I belonged to that body down on the table, but it, like people have said, you leave through the head, you leave through, you know, your heart chakra, no idea, because it's a split second I was inside my body, the next split second I'm not. It was just, happens so quickly that I don't even have words to describe it. You're there and then you're not. But there is a knowing that I lived with that body. And I know some people see, you know, silver cords and things like that. For me, it was more, I was attached to that and I belonged to that body, but I never saw a silver cord or anything like that. And then it's the same thing, you know, going back in, it's within a split second, I'm all of a sudden back in my body. And I always do, the best description I have is the Santa Claus movie with Tim Allen, when he goes to deliver presents to the chimney and he just gets sucked in, because that's what it felt like, just this giant vacuum cleaner just sucking me back in. And again, it just happens so quickly. But that was my first one. But then my second near-death experience happened 2 years later, because then what happened is I got really sick and I had bone marrow suppression, I was bruising, I had low platelet count, I had low white blood cell, I had low red blood cell. And so I was really sick. It took several years for that to this. So now I know, having gone to med school, that it's called idiopathic aplastic anemia. And so it's a suppression of the bone marrow itself. And now that that's like a whole other story, but it took me a couple of years to get well, and I started bruising and I had all these side effects. My watches would stop, televisions turned on, and all these crazy electrical interference that I now know are very common for people who experience a near-death experience. But then 2 years later, I had another near-death experience, but according to somebody who read my chart, I think I actually had more near-death experiences, several more, but I don't remember them because it's in the astrological chart, my near-death experiences.
Oh, so
it's
wow.
I know, it's fascinating. It's really fascinating because we incarnate to have these experiences. I thought this was going to be a great idea before I came into my body and said, oh yeah, let me have a near-death experience and that will put me on track and then I'll do these other things.
Wow.
But the second experience was very different from the first one. And it happened in the middle of the night. And I was just used to, so for 2 years now, because this is my second near-death experience, was 2 years later. It was this constant feeling of my soul leaving my body. And I would just constantly, you know, we're not leaving, we're staying here, go back in the body, soul. But it's this constant sort of a shadow. I don't know how to explain it, that you have this sensation of the soul leaving the body. So in the middle, and it would happen a lot in the middle of the night. And I would just say, no, we're not leaving. And I would pull my legs up because I had such, you know, low blood flow because I was deficient in basically all blood cells. And in the middle of the night, I woke up again and I would take my head off the pillow, like I always do, pull my legs up. And that was it. It's the same thing as the first time. I was just sucked out of my body. In a split second, I was out. But the second experience was very different. And I always joke that I didn't get the full effect. The first, they saved me too quickly. So the spirit was like, we have to do it again because she didn't get the full effect. She didn't get all the messages she needed. So then the second time it was more like, you know, a Star Wars movie where I'm just tumbling through outer space, through darkness. And then I get to this place that I call a mid station because it was as if you go into a skyscraper that has 100 floors and you push the button on the 50th floor and you get off at the 50th floor, you know that there's floors above you and you know that there's floors below you, but you can only see the 50th floor. That's the floor you're on.
Right.
But it was that kind of a sensation. And I call it the mid station. Like I ended up in the middle because I was aware that there were layers below me, but there was also layers above me. But as I get to this place and I don't have a body, I'm just in spirit. And so you're just, you know, in space. And I hear the most beautiful music. But this music you can't make on the earth plane because I tried for days. We had a synthesizer, probably had over 200 sounds. I tried every single sound for days trying to make the music or the sounds that I had heard of that beautiful music. That was nothing that even came close. And I've heard this from other people too, that have heard the music or have seen artwork or paintings. The colors are like so, you know, magnificent that you can't see them here on earth. So I heard this incredibly beautiful music and I'm wondering where the music is coming from. So I look to my right and of all things, I see a little log cabin. It looks like a, you know, a freestanding sauna, wooden cabin kind of, just a little cabin. And I always laugh because everybody sees different things. And I'm thinking the music must be coming from this little cabin. So I open the door, but it's empty. So then I look to my left and I see the exact mirror image of the cabin that's on the right, but on my left. So I open that door, I look inside, but it's empty. But then I become aware of this growing white light that is like a car dealership spotlight. I mean, it's very bright, the brightest, whitest you can imagine. And it's coming from behind me. So as I'm turning around into this light, it's like, imagine a spotlight going through a dense fog. So it's just extending you. All you see is this bright white light, but it extends out and around you, you're completely absorbed by this light. Music is coming from the light. But in the light, there is an outline of angels and the music is coming from the angels.
Oh.
I still didn't believe in angels. And I was still trying to understand my first near-death experience. And I'm still thinking, it must have been a hallucination. It must be something that happens when we die. It can't be. Because I was such a scientist and such an atheist that I still had a hard time. I was still struggling putting my first experience into context. And here I am seeing angels and hearing the most beautiful music. But not only that, that light, that bright divine light, that is divine source or God or whatever you want to call it. I'm still not religious because I don't believe that there could just be one religion. It can't be, because this is divine source. We come from this.
Yeah.
But also that we return this bright, loving, unconditional love and light when we move on from this physical world, but also that we carry this light within us. We are part of this light, and we carry that within us. And then I become aware, to my right, there's two, like I call them the spirit guides. And the spirit guide on my right talks to the other spirit guide, and he says, "What is she doing here? She can't be here. She has to go back." As if, you know, the clock is ticking. She's supposed to be back down there. And I just said, no, wait a second. How can it be that I'm outside my body and I'm still me? How does this work? I've been, you know, struggling with this for 2 years already. And the spirit guide on my left says, well, if we told you, you wouldn't remember, but you will remember this. And then it was as if I was standing on the moon, looking down on the earth, but around the earth, there was what I call the silvery, glittery fishnet, for a lack of a better term, because this was 1992, so we didn't have the internet. Now you can Google grid around the earth, and you'll see very similar to what I saw. But to me, it looked like a fishnet, because fishnets are kind of diamond-shaped, and I grew up playing fishnets with my grandmother in the ocean in Sweden, mm-hmm. in northern Scandinavia. Mm-hmm. And so she would lift these fishnets out of the ocean early in the early morning sun. And when those water droplets are on the fishnet, they sort of glitter and shimmer in the morning sunlight. So for a lack of a better term, and not ever having seen a grid around the earth on it because the internet didn't exist, that's what I called it. I called it the silvery, glittery fishnet around the earth. But the spirit guide said, everything on earth is connected to each other, but everything on earth is connected up to this grid. And with that information, I got sent back. And that was, you know, now in 1994 was that near-death experience. And that has stayed with me all these years, but it's not until last few years that all of a sudden it all made sense, because now I understand how integrated we are and how interconnected we are as humans to our own soul families, to people that we are in relationships with, to our friends, to our past lives, to the people that are in the spirit world that we might never have met. You're still connected to your grandfather. Let's say it wasn't even in your DNA. It was your stepfather's father, right? So you don't even have DNA. You're still connected to that, because you're connected to that stepfather who's connected to his father. And we're all connected, you know, now we know via quantum physics that we are actually connected. But that is how work that I do today really stems from these two near-death experiences, especially the second one.
So like that, I was just saying, like the ancestral healing, that's why you're realizing it's so important that we each as individuals do healing, because it's not just our own individual healing. We're also healing the collective, the past, and the future.
Exactly. Because we are all connected to our ancestors via our own experiences. So sometimes ancestral healing can be when you have a mother wound, the mom had something wrong, but you're connected to your mom. So it's combined with your own experiences that you had as a child, but it becomes ancestral because the experiences that you're having, your mother, if we're talking about the mother wound, your mom typically also experienced, and her mom and her mom and her mom and so on. It goes down the line, because we repeat the patterns of the way we raise our children, the way we interact with our emotions, everything that we do and say, our actions and reactions. But ancestral healing has to do with all the traumatic events that happened within our families. And many times it's the things that were swept under the carpet, even you know, things that people never talked about. My mom had an affair, or my dad cheated mom, and all those different things. And guess what? It repeats as well. And I see that when I work with people, it's all a repetition of the family lineage. And it's always the traumatic events and the things that were swept under the carpet. And that's what repeats, because it's an unresolved issue, because it's all energy, and we are all energy beings. We are energy, spiritual energy beings that having a physical experience in these bodies on Earth. And it's like our memory from being on the other side sort of gets wiped, right? This sort of erase it while we're in our bodies. We don't remember our past lives typically, or where we came from. If we did, I don't think we would put up with being on this thing because it's so much work. We're constantly feeling our emotions and dealing with solving our issues to grow, you know, the soul itself. It's all integrated.
So what do you do with the hemisync in terms of, I know that there's so many, so probably mostly in the last 10 years, I feel like there's been just a huge awakening for people wanting to resolve these issues collectively and individually, and to use different techniques, modalities, spiritualities. I've been, you know, studying with Kabbalah for many years, and that's been very helpful. So how do you, what is the hemisync and how does this play in? And also, by the way, the physical healing, because I feel like you're a great person to ask about this. How do you, and I'm sure that it's a lot more than can be answered in this one interview, but how do you, what are some of the techniques or ways that, or just concepts of how you bring resolution to, you know, the issues that we face as humans?
So Hemisync is a company that's part of the Robert Monroe Institute, or it used to be owned by Robert Monroe, for those who have read the Monroe books. And it got, you know, purchased by somebody else, and now it's, you know, just Hemisync. But they do a lot of, so I developed the product. They do all the, you know, putting the music on and adding the Hemisync beats. So Hemisync refers to hemispheral synchronization. So you're synchronizing your right and left brain hemispheres. So they do a lot of different things. They have a lot of different meditations and, you know, ADD, ADHD, and all sorts of different things. So I'm part of their website that has, you know, healing of some sort. And so when I developed these, the first one I developed was the mother wound, and that was released last summer. And then the second one I did was relationship wounds, and that was just recently released on September 20th, 2023. And I decided to do those two first because they say, you know, which one do you want to do next? What do you want to do? And then I submit, you know, a proposal, and then they approve it. But the first one I did on the mother wound because I think the mother wound is something, it doesn't matter if you tell me that, oh, I had the most wonderful mom. We were like a Leave It to Beaver family and everything was great. I love my mom. I already know you have a mother wound because I already know, because you have, if everything was so perfect, there were things that you had to sacrifice in order to be that perfect child, because you're also taught to do this and that. And, you know, if you're a girl, for example, like I'm a woman, little girls, I was born in 1958. So I was raised during the 1960s. But it's a lot of it is still the same. Little girls, you know, help out with the dishes. Little girls set the table. Little girls don't spill. Little girls are nice. We don't speak back. We don't show anger. We don't do all these different things. And so we already know it doesn't matter how lovely your mom was, but you're not going to have been seen and heard probably in more than one way. And sometimes the mom might have been a wonderful mom and always loving and very nurturing, but you might have felt that mom wasn't strong enough to deal with your issues that was going on in school. So you didn't even tell mom about those things, but mom was very loving and very warm. But that is to create what's called a mother wound, because you're not being seen, you're not being heard. All those feelings of not being seen and heard, you then take, you transpose it on your partner typically, and then you don't feel seen and heard by your partner. Well, of course not, because you're the caterer. You're doing everything that you were told to do as a little girl, because that's what little girls do. You nurture everybody else. You do the dishes. You do all the cooking. You do all these different things. And then you don't feel seen and heard, and you feel like you're alone in life. Well, that's really a mother wound you're dealing with, because you have to untangle that. And then you have people who didn't have great moms, and they were distant and cold, or maybe alcoholic, or there was different issues, or maybe mom passed away when they were a child, or there was an ugly divorce or something. And then all those issues create certain wounds. But those are the experiences that we carry in our heart. And then We have a difficult time relating to other people or stepping into our full power. We feel alone in the world. I can't find the right relationship. Right. And so with that, I developed a mother wound first and then the relationship, because that is tied to many different things as well. And people say, you know, I'm on my third marriage or I'm on my third boyfriend. I don't understand why I can't find the right person. And so this edition that was released in September talks about, you know, how do you, it specifically talks about relationships with your children, your parents, or your partner, because we have to limit it because we can only get so much done in 30 minutes. And it's each of these journeys are 4 30-minute tracks. So it's actually a 2-hour, it's like you're sitting through a seminar and being taught, how do I untangle this? I have an issue with not being seen, not being heard, or I might have a physical issue, or I might have anxiety or OCD. Where is this coming from? Why is it that I have these issues now? And it actually has worksheets that you can download. So you can get it on MP3 or a CD. But if you get it on an MP3, which is what most people do nowadays, you just download the worksheets and I take you through different examples. So let's say you have anxiety. Let's do this, the anxiety for sirens, because this is such a good one. So let's say you hear sirens, police sirens, firefighter sirens, and every time you do, you get tremendous anxiety. But you don't know why, because you were never in a car accident. Nobody was ever sick. You didn't have 911 come to your house. There's really nothing in your personal life that can tie this anxiety to those sirens, because you didn't have experiences with sirens yourself. So why is it that you have this anxiety? Well, when you look back, it might be ego back to your grandfather. Your grandfather was in the World War II and the sirens went off. That meant the airplanes are coming. They're going to drop the bombs. And every time your grandfather heard those sirens, he thought, this is it. This is the day I'm going to die. But that those things actually get transferred down on the genes. And we know that from different studies. So there was a study done back in 2013, and it was called Epigenetic Inheritance of Ancestral Odor Fear Conditioning. And it was a study that was led by Brian Diaz at the Emory University School of Medicine in Atlanta, Georgia. And they took mice, and they took male mice. And then every time they smelled this cherry blossom smell, they would give them an electric shock. So after a while, the mice feared the cherry blossom smell because they knew they'd get an electric shock. So they would stay away from the cherry blossom smell. Well, then they artificially inseminated female mice. The male mice didn't even get to meet the female mice. They took the sperm of the male mice and fertilized the female mice. And her offspring, her pups, feared the cherry blossom smell, even though they had never smelled it themselves, because it was passed down on the DNA. But that's also what they see with research from people that survived the concentration camps. And they now have, there's one gene, the FABP5 gene. I don't know, there's some more genes that have come up where they can see that those genes were altered by the people's fears that they had to live through. And that's passed down, we know, to the grandchildren already. But that's probably going to keep getting passed down. So these weird things that, you know, all of a sudden people have a fear about something, or they become OCD, or teenagers start cutting themselves. Well, where is it coming from? Why are you doing that? Could it be an ancestral issue? You just have to look at, is this something that's coming directly from this person because they experienced something, or is it something that was inherited? So inherited can mean it got passed down on the DNA, or it got passed down through what I call the invisible grid or quantum fix, because we are entangled with everybody else. And all the things that happened to our ancestors, all the traumatic events that were never resolved, is going to get passed down. So we all carry trauma from our ancestors. All the things that, it doesn't matter what it was, right? They were left alone. They weren't loved. They had an affair. Somebody died. I mean, it's the lists are endless. But we all carry these issues right? And they get stored. And so we carry emotions of our ancestors.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's so crazy that you use the example of the sirens, because when I was little, I mean, I was one of six kids. And so, you know, there were some things that, like, you know, I could definitely see that my siblings weren't freaking out about. And one was the sirens. It's like every time I would hear that, and we lived near the hospital because my dad was a surgeon. So it's like, and at that time he was, you know, resident or whatever. So he was going in all hours, and so we lived right by the hospital. So I'd hear those. And it's like, I was constantly in this like state of complete panic. And then if the fire alarm went off in the apartment that we lived in, it was one of those fire alarms that said, like, had a voice. It said, like, leave immediately, fire, like that. And it was so scary. When that would go off, it's like I would run around like a frantic screaming bee, probably like 4 years old, 5 years old, 6 years old, you know, all the way up, and just go and grab my sister and my brother and tell them, you've got to wake. I remember my sister, she was like sleeping, and said, you've got to get up. We've got to get out of here. And it's like, I felt like so many fears like that when I was a child, like a lot of that panic, especially mm-hmm. around sirens. And so it's interesting how you said that, because a lot of people are like, oh yeah, childhood. And sometimes when I think back to childhood, I'm like, I feel like I was like constantly like feeling like we're going to die, or, you know, and I had some mm-hmm. recurrent dreams about buildings blowing up as well, that I can still remember to this day. So it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it makes you wonder, right, where is that coming from? And,
yeah.
You know, and also when you're a child, a young child has memories of their past lives, typically, I think around age 3 and 4. And they've done, you know, so much research on that. And I know Netflix even put out a documentary about kids who had memories of past lives that investigated. So we know past lives. It's just kind of, you know, the science is still lagging behind. But even with the science now, we know that people are remembering things from a past life, things that young children would have no knowledge of. And so it could be your past life, or it could be an ancestral, it comes from the ancestors.
It's so fascinating. And even just on any level, like sometimes, you know, you walk around with like a sadness in your heart. And yeah, there are things that are sad that have happened in life. But sometimes I really feel that it's almost like you can sense it. I mean, I also practice something called theta healing, where you kind of go into a theta brainwave state. Mm-hmm. And from there, it kind of gives you some perspective about, is this mine, or where is it coming from? Because yeah, especially like sadness in the heart, you know, anxieties and different things like that people struggle with on a daily basis can be, you know, remediated. And I don't know if you have a practice. I mean, obviously the hemisync and balancing the right and left brain. But if you have any other techniques, like for example, in the moment of how to release that, is it just by our conscious desire?
I before and after I work with each client, I sage, I take flower remedies, I set intentions to separate the energies between mm-hmm. every single client that I work with. Because I know enough to that we absorb other people's emotions and other people's trauma. And that is absolutely, I mean, you can't get away with that, because we do. And the more empathic you are, the more you're going to be in tune. But typically when you are working as a healer, you are empathic, because that's what led you to become a healer, because you can feel the need of that other person, right? And how they're feeling. But I think it's really important to, you know, separate, you know, the simple things like, I have blonde hair, my client has brown hair, my client is over there now, and I'm in this room, right? Doing the, just thinking of separating physically, but also just setting the intention of her energy belongs to her, my energy belongs to me. And, right. You know, I always sage, I sage. I have this whole tray next to my desk. And I'll just break off a little piece of the, because the sage stick is so big, but you can just break off a tiny little piece that is, you know, like the size of your half of your pinky. And you just light that little piece, and, you know, just for 10 seconds, you just clear the air, set the intentions, that energy, I'm releasing it, goes back to that person, or sending healing and, you know, closing that, and then move on to the next client, so that you're have a, like a routine of clearing that energy and separating yourself from that energy. Otherwise, you're going to start having ancestral issues or energetic issues or emotional issues, because we don't just absorb things from our mom or dad or siblings or grandma and grandpa, the direct ancestral DNA lineage, but we can absorb from, you know, mom's boyfriend who she was with and separated from because he was really mean or blah, blah, blah. We absorb energy from those people too. We absorb energy from, in ancestral healing, let's say your grandfather, you know, had slaves back in the day and he had this whole business. Well, though he worked with the, you know, he had those slaves for his whole life and now you're entangled with that. So, you know, it's that all the people that are close to the family, it doesn't even have to be a blood relative, is what I'm saying. It can come from, I mean, it's a little bit overwhelming when you think about it, but granted, I mean, how many things did all my ancestors do wrong? I'm sure it was a lot. They all lived through World War I and World War II and just crazy times, but I'm not going to have absorbed all of that. I've absorbed a thing here and a thing there. There's lots of people in the family that could have taken the other things, or maybe some of the things are not being absorbed by the people and they're going on to the next generation, right? You're going to get a handful of whatever also it is that you're incarnated to learn in this life.
So, yeah. Right? Do you think that we use like certain lessons, like before we come here, you know, you could, we kind of sort out. I mean, I think a lot of different pathways and people are talking about this now, that when you're on the other side or before you incarnate, you're like, okay, let me choose the exact right situation that's going to allow my soul to do the, let's say, corrections that it needs to do in this lifetime to bring itself back up. Because the idea is that when you release, or when you're able to respond differently, not react, respond differently to life, maybe something that I used to be taking everything on my shoulder or taking over responsibility for everybody's feelings. So now I learned that that's not the way that's going to bring me to wholeness and going to bring me more of a alignment with that light that you spoke about. So I choose before we come here, we choose the exact situation that's going to allow us to do that work.
I absolutely think so. I always joke that we're at the, you know, the cafe looking at the menu saying, oh, you know, number 36, that sounds good. I'll get a divorce and I'll take number 102. I'm going to have, you know, I'm not going to have a successful marriage, or I'm going to major in the wrong thing when I'm young. And then I'm going to have a near-death experience. I'll take number 4, please. And we put all these little, I call them the sticky notes, in our backpack. And we're going to have all these life experiences and we're, you know, so excited. This is going to be a great trip. And I'm going to learn all these great things. I'm going to have all these obstacles to overcome there. And then as soon as we're here, we don't remember anything about it. And now we just go through life. It just seems like one hurdle after another, because life is just all these hurdles and we just jump hurdles all life. Right? When we think we don't have any hurdles for a while, then after a couple of years, here comes another hurdle. Right? There's always difficulties or sadness or grief and things we have to overcome.
Process, yeah.
Right? It's just this constant process and growth that we go through. So, yeah, I absolutely think that we incarnate to have these different experiences. And, you know, with everything being in your astrological chart, how, you know, we know that it's there. And we can, when we look back, oh yeah, that's there. My divorce is there. My near-death experience is right there. Oh yeah. And then I was sick right there. And you can see it in the chart, right? It doesn't say exactly specifically, but it's very close. So how could it be in your chart, right? If it wasn't already pre-planned. But also when you see things ahead of time and you have premonitions, you know, certain things are going to happen. You know, you already, I mean, I'm not the only one who has these premonitions or know what's going to happen ahead of time. But when you have these experiences, which is just a matter, we all have this ability to tune into that. But that also shows us that it doesn't matter. You can't change the event that is about to happen. It's going to happen. You can't change it. You've already seen it. You already know it's about to manifest. And it doesn't matter what it is. Somebody is sick, you're going to be in an accident, you get the job or you're not going to get the job. All these different things that people have intuition or see, they might see it in a dream, they might see it in a meditation, and then it plays out. But I've had so many of these. And so for 12 years, after 12 years, I learned to trust in the spirit world because everything they showed me would play out. And it didn't matter how hard I would try to make it not happen, it's still going to happen. I can't change that outcome.
So what's the space for prayer in your opinion?
Yeah, so I think certain things, right, it's life is so complicated, but I think that certain things are predestined. And we can, you know, who we're going to meet, who we're going to marry, different big life lessons. What I'm eating for dinner tonight, I'm sure it's my decision. And I did not have the sticky note for that one, right? But the big, who was I going to marry? I was going to have 3 kids, blah, 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 blah. I was going to have a near-death experience. And then I was going to do the other things with what I learned from that. That I think is predetermined, like all those big things. But then, you know, why is it that some people, so then we get sick. And then, you know, some people heal and they set the intention, they pray, they have the whole church pray for them, whatever it is that works for them. And then they recover, have a spontaneous recovery. And then you take the next person, they do the exact same thing. Everybody's praying for them and everything's, you know, doing the same thing and they die. So why is that? Why is that some people, for some people, all those prayers and intentions work, and then for the next person, it doesn't? I think that is just the incarnation. That person, that's how it was supposed to be. It's all I can say, because sometimes you just can't change the outcome. I knew when my father was going to die. I've known when other people was going to die in my family. There was nothing I could do to change that. And that was their timestamp. They came in, that was going to be their life. But we go through life and then we worry about, everyone worries about, I'm going to have heart disease like my dad, or I'm going to get cancer like my mom. And everybody's afraid of the things that we've all heard, right? That people die from stroke, heart disease, and cancer, I would say are the big ones. And then we go through our whole life worrying, you know, I'm getting older now. Am I also going to get cancer or a stroke? When in fact, you might have incarnated to, you know, be stung by a bee when you're eating dinner in a restaurant, and you're going to have anaphylactic shock and pass away right there within 2 minutes, right? But we don't think about all the other ways that we could die. We spend so much time worrying about that we're going to get the same disease as our parents. But, you know, there is no point really in worrying, because your life is, I think, is already predetermined. And when I went to Arthur Findlay College, it was my first time there. It was back in 2017. And I had left a day early because so worried about the jet lag and, oh my gosh, I'm going to Arthur Findlay College. All these people are going to be amazing. And what I'm doing, right? Even though I had been talking to the spirit world for, you know, 15,
just 16 years. Just to let people know, Arthur Findlay College is a universe. It's like a mediumship school in the UK, correct?
Yep. Yeah, it's psychic sciences and mediumships, probably the top school in the world. And so here I am sitting in the hotel room the day before, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I'm 6 months out of med school and my brain is going to turn to mush. I'm not stimulating it with all this information. Or my mom had passed away just a couple of years earlier from dementia. She was like 87. And I was like, I don't want to get dementia. I don't want to get dementia. And so I spent almost the whole day in the hotel room because I was just trying to get over my jet lag. And I found this like brain teasers or brain games or something on Netflix. And I was like, wow, this is a fun show. So I just kept watching it for a couple of hours. I'm watching all these brain games. So then I go to the college, and like 2 days later, I had my teacher read me, and she said, oh, I have your mom here. And she says, you've been watching all these brain games or something on television because you're so worried you're going to get dementia like shit. And I was just started laughing. I was like, oh my God, my mom knows what I'm doing. And then she says, your mom is laughing. She says, don't worry, you're not going to get dementia. You're going to die from something else. And so from that moment on, that was 6 years ago now, that's it. Because you spend so much time worrying about that you're going to get the same thing your parents did, because it's so close to you, so close to your heart. and you saw them suffer and you're like, oh my gosh, I don't want to get that. What can I do to not get the same?
Right. As they had, in some right? ways, spur, and you probably know this as a doctor, in some ways it can spur like for me, for example, I know that it's very important for me to, I don't always do it, but to, just because I've had grief, like with my dad passing, my brother passing, and this, it's important for me to keep my heart open and to really make efforts to do that. And one way that it was kind of, somebody mentioned it to me recently, it's like your heart, you need to like keep a sock on it because it can go cold. And it's easier for me to like isolate and to kind of, you know, do things on my own. I'm also kind of a bit of a creative, so I can kind of live in my own world, but I know that it's important for me to keep that heart open and to keep connecting with other hearts in that way. Or, you know, health, if you watch somebody go through a health struggle, so, you know, it may awaken you to take actions, like, and even to be open to different ways, you know, maybe you get like vitamin drips or you do like infrared sun or all these things that we're now having that are newer, older technologies, or watching how you eat, or, you know, consuming a lot of ginger, whatever it is, like anti-inflammatory, like using whatever the fears are to actually, or maybe just cutting the fear off, but just gaining consciousness and awareness about all these things that we can do to keep our energetic field better, sink our brain, like you spoke about the hemi sink, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's important. I think it's all about processing, feeling our emotions, letting us have the emotions, right? So if you have grief, let, you know, then grieve, sit with that. If you have fear or anger, then sit with that. Because it's feeling the emotions, acknowledging the emotions that you're having, you know, write about it, talk about it, even if it's to yourself. When I went through my own healing, I did a lot of that because, you know, people don't think about, it sounds so wonderful and great to have a near-death experience, but you also have a lot of PTSD because what got you to into that situation was some form of traumatic event. Right. Mm-hmm. And so then years later, you're still dealing with the PTSD. You wake up in the middle of the night. Oh my God, you know, I'm dying. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm just sleeping. Right. And so I went through, you know, I was writing in a journal, you know, forgiving the doctor. I was so mad at the hospital and angry that I had go through all of that healing journey. But, you know, then realized that, well, that last doctor did save my life. So, you know, thanking the doctor, writing, and just expressing my emotions on paper. Sometimes I would even say it out loud. I would just go outside and look up at the sky and say, I forgive you. I understand that this was just a journey, and just be with those emotions and move on, letting the emotions move through your body. Because once you hold it inside of you and you stuff those emotions down, those emotions are most likely going to create some form of a disease. Because we know from research that certain people are more likely to get certain types of diseases based on how they process their emotions and how, do they have boundaries or poor boundary structure? They can never say no. They'll fix the neighbor's fence that live three blocks down. They just can't say no to people. They're just overly nice. They get certain types of diseases. Women that hold all of their emotions, they suppress all their emotions all the time, they get certain diseases. We know this from research, right?
Even impulses like drinking or smoking, it may not even be like obviously physically, but what's the root of that physical action is that I feel something that's unresolved and I don't know how to feel it. So then people turn to all different kinds of things to numb, and then those things can cause issues. So
yeah. Right. Yes. And exactly. You just, people who are drug addicts or use alcohol, you know, to numb themselves, that's because they don't even know where to begin. They're just trying to feel good in that moment. Even if it just gives them a 2-minute high, they're just, the pain that they carry is so great. Right. Instead of, you know, going to therapy or doing ancestral healing or doing some other modality to release the feelings that have been suppressed. But, you know, people just turn to other things to try and numb it instead. But then one leads to another, and then you get other diseases, and it's just a downward spiral.
Yeah. And speaking of, you know, of this type of a downward spiral, but it can always be stopped with just 1 minute of awareness. That's why I feel that it's so important that there are people like you, or, you know, that's also why I do this podcast. I used to be a medical writer. I have nothing against it. I was interviewing surgeons and I kind of grew up in that, but I'm taking the skills that I learned from there and also from writing for many years in spirituality. And I want to be able to connect with individuals like yourself and just keep putting it out there that there are other ways to handle, you know, health issues. There are other ways to think about life. And even if one person can gain one thing, that can just cut one of those little cords of despair that's in the heart space. Like, that's one thing, you know, that's my intention. That's one thing that I can do to make a difference. Because like you said, otherwise it just feels like everything's just spiraling out of control, you know, and it's just, then you just feel overwhelmed and kind of paralyzed by this feeling, which is also, you know, maybe a traumatic feeling from childhood of being helpless and hopeless, and you don't know, you can't make a difference. But I just think it's important that all of these, that we're all kind of doing our part to make a difference for the collective and for ourselves.
Everybody we heal, I look at it the same way. For every one person that I can help heal, that person then helps heal all the people around them, right? So I've had people tell me, you know, we do an ancestral healing session, and then that person, she was probably in her 50s or 60s maybe. So it wasn't that she was, you know, in her 20s. And we just had one session. We did a healing on something. And then she emailed me and she said, my younger brother said to me, I don't know what you're doing, but I see the change in you. And you've encouraged me. And I can see that you're healing. And I'm going to go to therapy now. And so she hadn't even told her brother about it, but her energy changes, right? Because when you create healing, your energy changes. And so the way other people then tune into your energy, because we do this all day long with people, we tune into their energy field, he could feel that she was healing. And then that brought him to then go to counseling and start healing. And then, of course, then if he has kids, wives, or whatever, then that spreads on and on and on. So for every person that we can help heal, we help heal the whole world, because we are all connected, right? Through our energy field. We resonate and entrain with other people's hearts. We actually resonate and entrain with all, even with vegetation, with trees, whether it has a heart or not, right? So even with vegetation, but we do it with animals, we do it with everything. I mean, our electromagnetic field from our heart is like, I don't know, 9 or 12 feet out. I mean, it's huge, much, much bigger than the brain. So we know that. And, you know, we have all these medical instruments. We have EKG and EEG and all these different things where we measure the electrical activity and magnetic fields of the body. And we know that. And so, you know, but we don't think of ourselves that way. We just think of ourselves as these physical beings, but we're really spiritual creatures that have all these energy fields. You know, I can't wait to see what we're going to be doing 20 or 30 years from now, because I feel like we're in a movement right now where people are really becoming aware of the fact that, oh yeah, I am intuitive. Yeah, I am spiritual. Yeah, I can feel people's energies. And they're getting curious about, well, how does it work? But right. That's all we need in order to create healing, not just for ourselves and our families, but for the entire world, because our world is pretty messy right now. And it's always, I feel the world's always a mess. It was a mess when I was a kid. I feel it's still in a mess. I didn't think it was going to last this long, but I think it's just this ever-changing mess. But that's also because you have to have conflict in the world in order to grow. And so, you know, there is a rise in consciousness and global consciousness activity and healing because of what we're seeing is almost like the light versus the dark sometimes, because people are, you know, there's so much greed in the world and economic power.
Yes.
Right. That these big corporations and not that, you know, they're all bad, but there's a lot of greed involved in politics and the way our world is run, even between the different countries. And it all comes down to power and greed.
Yeah. But it's also, in a way, and especially like with COVID, it's interesting because everybody felt that, you know, all the power was some people like, anyway, in whatever realm and whatever boat you were in, you felt powerless because the world was shutting down and you felt, but in that powerlessness and in that time, it's like interesting, like the universe puts you into a quarantine, into your own space. And what do you find when you're by yourself and quiet and all the main places where we go, you know, the stores and this, like everything's closed. So a lot of people, you know, you're in your home, or if you were able to, if you live near nature, maybe you were out in nature on a hike, and there it's just interesting. I feel that with everything that's going on, we're being called to awaken to our own power that we have inside, to that connection to the divine that you speak of, that people, now you see so many people talking about near-death experiences, and also just awakening to the fact that there's so much more beyond what we can see. And mediumship is huge for that. It's just like 2 days ago, I'm still reeling. Like this weekend, I happened to be sitting next to somebody at a dinner, and I didn't even know she was a medium. And then she says, you know, you're like, I don't know how we kind of got talking. We were chatting, and she said, your father's here. And he's talking about a sofa. And it's like crazy because like in the last week I was like looking, I need to get a new sofa. And then he told her the price and like things that I cannot deny, you know? And so we had a conversation there, and I'm still kind of processing that, of what that means in my psyche, that I've been into this stuff and I've tapped in and talked to souls, but every time there's something new, it kind of wakes me up more to a different aspect of reality, and to some way maybe that I'm thinking small, or, you know, not really connecting with who I really am.
Yeah. And I love those stories. That's how I got sent to Arthur Findlay College. I just graduated from med school in June 2016. I took my boards in August of 2016. And now it's September. And so I don't even have results yet for the boards. You get those like the first week of October, because it's a national test. Everybody takes it at the same time. So I can't be any cheating and all this stuff. And it's 3 days of exams. So it's a lot for them to correct. And so I met this woman. I was studying craniosacral therapy because I was just helping out in the clinic. I'm just doing things that I can do to help, but I couldn't really work as a doctor yet. So I studied craniosacral therapy with the Upledger Institute. And I met this woman, and I knew she lived, because the class was in San Francisco, and we had to say the city where we were from. So I said, oh, I'm from Phoenix, Arizona. And she said, oh, I'm from Scottsdale, Arizona. So it turns out she had just moved here. So Scottsdale is like 15 minutes away. And we never got a chance to work on each other. And that's all I knew about this woman. I didn't know anything else. And I said, you know what? Let's have some time. And then like a month later, we met for dinner in Scottsdale. And I mean, I've only seen this woman once, like a month earlier. I could barely remember what she looked like. Like, okay, she looks like this. She looks like this. All right. We found each other. And then we're sitting at the bar, drinking some wine, waiting at the table. And she said, I'm a medium and your mom is here. Are you open to receive messages? And I was like, there's no way. There's just no way. Even though I went to medical school based on messages from the spirit world. But that was one thing. I mean, the spirit world talking to me directly. It's about me. I get it. I'm meeting this woman who doesn't know anything about me. And I'm thinking, I was born and raised in the country of Sweden. My childhood is so different. There's no way she's going to even get anything right. So I said, sure, I'm open. And of course, she knew about laying the fishnets, all these weird things as a child. That came up. So I was like, wow. And she kept saying, your mom keeps telling me you have to go study mediumship at Arthur Findlay College. And I said, I can't do that. I just graduated. I don't even know my board results yet. And after like several things, finally, I said, all right, okay, fine. I'll figure out a way to go study mediumship at Arthur Findlay College. And then 6 months later, in March of 2017, there I was. And that was my first trip. And the teacher said, oh, your mom says, you know, she don't worry about getting dementia. And that was the beginning of that whole mediumship journey. But I think it's very typical. That's how it also comes in. It would be some random person that gives you a message, but it's for you to understand that, oh yeah, they are always around you. Your dad and your brother, they're always around you. They come in and check on you all the time. They know exactly what you're thinking because they read your thoughts. Mm-hmm. Every thought, and that can be scary to people when you say that, because they're thinking, oh my God, I was thinking, you know, some bad thoughts. Everybody does. The spirit world knows that. They had bad thoughts when they were alive. That's just, it's being human. You know, sometimes we have bad thoughts and sometimes we have good thoughts. It's just sorting out thoughts, being human. But that's also, you know, for you to go on that journey, I think yourself to open that door, because, you know, I just feel like that's part of your journey is to tap into that more. And that's why you also, you're getting these experiences, because the spirit world is kind of, hi, Debbie. Can you hear me?
Please.
We're going to give you a message. Dinner tomorrow. Right.
Even like then last night, I was like, I felt that they were around. I'm like, you know, because when she had told me, she said, you know, he's showing me sitting on the couch with your sweater, exactly how I'm sitting on your thing, you know, and feeling like this. So last night I just, you know, it's crazy. It's a whole new awareness. It's like a different realization, because sometimes I think that people feel alone. Even if you're with people, you can have this feeling. It's one of the human feelings that we have. I feel alone because maybe I don't feel understood, or it's probably something from childhood, some sort of pattern that we had, maybe an energy that gets stuck in the body. And so these kinds of experiences are just waking me up to a different realization of, you know, that we're never alone, you know, and yeah. Somehow like tackling that, realizing that you're never alone, and that feeling of aloneness is just a feeling, and we can let it go because maybe it's done its job.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's just a feeling, and it's just being in a physical body and having these emotions and growing our soul. But the spirit world's always with us. They're always there. Which is hard, especially when we lose somebody that we love, because mm-hmm. they're not physically there anymore. And so to have somebody tell you, well, they're still with you. They're still with you. You know, it's not very helpful because they're not right here sitting on this chair. Right. And it takes time to grieve and the loss of that person. But once we find them again in the spirit world, that can be, you know, just an amazing journey in itself.
Totally. And just to piggyback on what you just said, like for anybody who's going through grief or grieving, I mean, I'm not an expert. I've been through it myself, and you know, that's part of this process. But I know that it can be part of the process is feeling like completely like especially if it's somebody that you were really close with. Like for example, my dad. It's like I only knew this world with my dad in it. And his energy, and he had a strong energy. And so as far as I knew as far as I was in this lifetime, I knew my own self and my dad was in the world, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Energy was gone from the physical world. Yeah. It's taken me some time to be able to really define myself in a different way, you know? Yeah. Even though I know that now I know he's, you know, sitting, he's probably here.
Yeah.
Still, I'm still in this world, and there's a reason that I'm here, and I still have, you know, things to do.
Mm. No, absolutely. But that's also probably part of your journey is to learn to connect with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
The more the more you connect and the more you open that door, the more you're going to hear, the more you're going to be aware. You know, it's like when sometimes I smell my mom's perfume and mm-hmm. like, mom, are you here? Where are you? Right. Mm-hmm. So, and that's, I would say many times that's how it starts. You smell, you just have an awareness, you sort of feel their presence.
Yeah. That's how I can mm-hmm. feel it kind of like energetically. Yeah. That I'm not alone, that there's somebody.
Yeah. Right. There's somebody's hanging around. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's probably part of your journey to, you know, open that door and, you know, start communicating more.
Exactly.
It's also, you know, why I would say sometimes it's just, you know, why people pass away in the family. It's also for, it sounds crazy, but, you know, that person's life is now going to change and it puts them on a different journey and a spiritual path. So, you know, it's we incarnate to create experiences for each other too.
Exactly.
Right? So like if we incarnate to, all right, I'm going to pass away when I'm 51 and this is how I'm going to pass away and it's going to be great and you're going to be my daughter and you need this experience and you need to grow spiritually in this life and that's going to put you on the path of doing X, Y, and Z, right? We all live on the same spider web. That's how I put it, you know, it's like Indra's net. Have you ever heard of Indra's net? It's like Buddhism or Hinduism, but it's like whatever you do affects everybody else, right? So it's like if everybody in your life live on the same spider web. So when you walk on the spider web, it vibrates and it's going to affect the people over on the other side of the spider web. And we're all integrated. We're all part of each other's lives. Why certain people, you know, pass away at a certain time. I feel it's all just, we have a timestamp.
And realizing, okay, that they're with me and they're around us, it's helping me to release some things within myself and also just building an awareness of the vastness of the universe. Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, my relationship with the creator, because they're souls and they're on the other side and they can see the bigger picture, but there is, I believe, you know, this one force and we're all a part of it, but my relationship to that force is like my own journey. And I think that each one of us, and that's a lesson that I learned with my brother and my dad, because I wanted to save him and I wanted to save that. And then I realized that by trying to save and trying to rescue, I'm kind of saying to the creator, I don't believe that you have your own relationship with that soul and that you have your own, it's your own creation. If you believe it like that, a part of your own essence, like between the creator and that, and each one of us has our own relationship to that essence, and we all connect in different ways. Some people are Buddhist, some people are religious, some people are just more spiritual like we are, but we all have this ability to connect with this greater force that's, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I just feel like we all have our path and we all have our time. There are people that have had near-death experiences and they said, oh, I was told I have three outs in this life and this was one of my outs. So I had a choice if I wanted to go back or if I wanted to stay versus I was not given a choice. It was just, you know, you have to go back.
Yeah.
So I think it's just different and maybe there's different ways. Maybe I only have one out in this life and that's the timestamp, whatever date and time and minute and second, that's when my life is over, right? Versus other people might have two or three outs.
Right.
And they have, you know, they can choose because it just sounds like some people have a choice and some people don't.
Right.
Right. It's all a mystery. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Lottie. This has been such a pleasure. I feel like I could talk to you for another hour.
I know we could go on for days. There's so much to cover about the cosmic chats, right?
Yes, exactly.
You know, we are part of that cosmic chat and so is the spirit world.
Wow, beautiful.
And so is other people out there. I'm sure there are other solar systems that have beings.
Galaxies, beings, exactly. It's a huge cosmic symphony.
Yeah.
But how can people find you? And can you just mention, I know your book is called Medical School After Menopause.
Yeah, it's called Med School After Menopause, The Journey of My Soul, which is available on Amazon and as well as other book platforms around the world. And it won an award for spiritual leadership. And so the book is about my near-death experiences, that both of them are in there in detail, but also my journey and how my mediumship and my psychic abilities unfolded in hopes that when people read it and they learn about my journey, that it will help them on their journey and to truly live their life from their heart, not so much from the mind, because the mind has a way of being logical and talking ourselves out of things instead of going with the heart. This is what I really want to do. And also to develop those mediumistic and intuitive abilities for themselves. And to learn more about me, just go to my website. It's drlottie.com, drlotte.com. And also tune in to my podcast, which is Dr. Lottie Science with Soul, which is available on all platforms around the world.
Which is amazing. I listened to it last night and I was just, and then I was also going through a bunch of episodes and just reading all of the people that you have interviewed. And it's just incredible for anybody who's interested in this healing in science and spirituality and bringing, elevating consciousness around all of these different aspects. Just check it out. Amazing.
Yeah, there's some very interesting people on there. My own teachers from Arthur Findlay College. We have Lynn McTaggart, who did all the intention experiments for, I don't know, 30 or 40 years now. Irvin Laszlo was a nominated Nobel Prize for the Peace Prize a couple of times, who works a lot with consciousness. We got people who do the global consciousness studies. I mean, just some tremendous people are on the podcast. So it's great for people who are looking for answers and are on their own spiritual journey in this life.
Beautiful, beautiful. Check it out, everybody. Thank you so much, Dr. Lottie.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, everybody. Bye-bye.